What the Prime Minister talked about on Tuesday is the need to move forward quickly after we've served the notice to scope out what the end state is going to look like, but recognising that that will then take some time to implement. Now, the clear message that we're giving, and I think this works for Britain and it works for Europe, no cliff edges, no sudden change for business, plenty of time to adjust.
We have a cabinet, I believe, the likes of which has never been appointed. There's never been a cabinet like this. I will say the other side is going absolutely crazy. They're going crazy. But we have a group of people that I just felt we had to go.
In summary, I'm committed to modernizing our nuclear stockpile, promoting and developing American energy in all forms, advancing the department's critical science and technology mission, and carefully disposing of nuclear waste. In fact, after being briefed on so many of the vital functions of the Department of Energy, I regret recommending its elimination.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is Friday, and it's January 20th, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. Glad to have you along for another edition of The Opening Bell. This is Inauguration Day, as the transfer, peaceful transfer of power happens in the world's greatest democracy. We'll see that happen later today as President-elect Donald Trump puts his hand on a Bible and takes the oath of office. President Obama and Mrs. Obama will fly out of the nation's capital and go to Palm Springs for a little bit of a vacation. All of that coming up later today. Of course, you'll hear live coverage of it right here on 720 WGN. Many Americans are obviously anxious. Others are excited and optimistic. You have a divided country right now. And I don't know about you, but I'm waiting to hear Mr. Trump, as he takes the oath of office and gives his speech, refer to all of us as his fellow Americans. Time to unite the country, move forward. There's lots of work to do. We've got to roll up our sleeves and get going. So here is the day that we started, inauguration later today in Washington. We'll talk more about the economy. Paul Nolte's in the House today. We're going to be looking back over the recent presidents, including Mr. Obama, to talk a little bit about how the economy has fared, what might be ahead in the Trump economy. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are off just about 4 points this morning. The NASDAQ and S&P futures are higher. Crude oil trading at $51.95 a barrel. Overnight, Asian shares generally were off just a bit, mixed and cautious trading, I guess is the best way to describe it, as the inauguration of Trump begins here in the U.S. China's report that its economy grew at 6.8% in October to December, in line with expectations. The Dow Jones erased gains for 2017 on Thursday, falling for the fifth day in a row. As the post-election Trump rally may be fading, we'll talk to Paul about that as well coming up. This morning, benchmark U.S. crude oil, as I mentioned, above $52 a barrel. The dollar fell against the yen and the euro. Yesterday, we got to hear from the Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen. While unemployment has fallen significantly and inflation is starting to tick higher, Yellen says she does not believe that the central bank has fallen behind the curve and needs to start pushing interest rates up more quickly. Here she is in a speech yesterday.
With the unemployment rate near its longer run normal level and likely to move a bit lower this year, a natural question is whether monetary policy has fallen behind the curve. The short answer, I believe, is no. It is true that many employers report difficulty in finding qualified workers in selected occupations, and that more workers are comfortable quitting jobs to take or look for better positions. But this is to be expected in a healthy labor market and not evidence that the economy as a whole is experiencing a serious worker shortage.
That was from a speech yesterday at Stanford University. Yellen says she believes the central bank is on the prudent course of gradually raising rates, maybe two, maybe three, coming up this year. 5:13 here on the opening bell, Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management, senior portfolio manager there. He's in the house. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Steve. Nice to be with you.
It's good to have you here on this transfer of power day. It's a big day for our democracy. Lots of people are looking to Washington for a number of different reasons. We thought we'd look back a little bit at the economy over the last 8 years. What would your report card be?
Mixed as always. You know, it's really difficult to sit and say this president was responsible for the economy as a whole. Much in the same way when you look at a sports team and say the coach was the be-all, end-all. You still have the players on the field. They still have to execute. You have management behind the team as well. So it's difficult to say Obama did everything, and this is why we're here. And it also depends on which side of the aisle you sit. Mm-hmm. Certainly the Republicans will say, oh, my gosh, he was the worst thing for the economy. And the Democrats would point to a lot of things that were actually good that he did. So as with all instances, the truth lies somewhere in the middle.
And you take all of those things with a grain of salt when I get ready to read these numbers, too. But if you look back at all of the presidents, at least in our modern history, President Clinton apparently had the largest gain on the S&P, the biggest change, a 209% increase. President Obama the second at 181.77. This is since World War II. So the second best S&P performance since World War II. But as you said, there's a lot of factors that go into that.
You know, he was inaugurated, obviously, January of 09. The market bottomed in the Great Recession in March of 09. And here we sit, within a hair's breadth of new all-time highs. So was he responsible for the market bottoming in March? Probably not. He was just getting his feet wet and understanding where everything was in the White House. So it's hard to say that, you know, he was responsible for a lot of that. Certainly zero interest rates helped. The Fed having the quantitative easing was a big factor. And then we can point to the other side of that and say, well, you know, the debt levels that we're now that we have in the United States are significantly higher than they were when he took office. So, again, it's a little bit of everything and hard to put your finger on that he was responsible for all of it.
Yeah, and we heard Janet Yellen there talking about the job market as it stands now. 76 months, I believe, of job growth during the Obama administration. That, again, other factors go into that, but that's some pretty good performance.
Absolutely. On average, something a little less than 200,000 new jobs every month, 11 million new jobs during the administration. And then again, the flip side of that would be wage growth is modest, one of the weakest in the recovery. This has been the weakest recovery of all recessions that we've had. So there's some other things that are going on behind the scenes that we're still trying to grasp as to why this is, maybe more part-time jobs, not as many manufacturing high-wage jobs is part of the reason why the wages aren't growing as much as they are. So, there's a lot of moving parts and hard to pin on any one person to say he's responsible.
We will continue our pre-dawn business conversation with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now, the Dow Jones Industrial Average has erased all of its gains for 2017, falling yesterday for the fifth day in a row and landing at 19,732. The S&P 500 dropped 8.25 points. The NASDAQ composite fell 15.5. Netflix is seeing soaring stock prices thanks to its massive global expansion and a ramp-up of streaming services. The company expects the growth to continue. It hopes to add nearly 4 million new international subscribers in the first quarter of this year alone. Uber has agreed to pay $20 million to settle claims that it misled drivers about how much money they could expect to make working for the ride-hailing service. Uber had said that drivers could make up to $30 an hour. Most drivers say they make far less. And Samsung plans to disclose what caused some Galaxy Note 7 handsets to catch fire. The company says the massive recall of 2.5 million phones last year cost it more than $5 billion. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It's 5:22. Welcome back to The Opening Bell, our Friday edition. Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management is in with us today. Paul, we were talking a little bit about the Obama administration. Let's talk a little bit about the Trump administration. We heard there the markets, the rally, the Dow rally, at least this week, seems to be fading. But what is it that is the danger that lies ahead for the Trump administration to sort of keep us on an upward projection here?
You know, it's going to be difficult. And it's true when you take a look at it, it's very much what you got handed and where you stand when you took office. So as we mentioned, Obama was fortunate enough to come in when the markets had already fallen apart. It bottomed a couple months after his administration started. The hard part for Trump is going to be the markets have gone up an awful lot. We've talked in the past about how high the valuation is for them. We have a lot of debt, and certainly he's talking about adding to those debt levels to spur economic growth and do a lot of infrastructure spending. It's going to be difficult, I think, given our economic backdrop. Zero interest rates are very close to zero interest rates that the Fed is talking about raising here. So there's a lot of headwinds that he's going to have to overcome to get the economy really to continue to grow, because we've already had, as you mentioned before, a very long economic expansionary period.
And you talk about not doing anything to mess that up either. This notion that we're hearing the trade war might be brewing with China, and there's all this stuff going on with Mexico. Are those things that could take us in the wrong direction?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, trade is one of the biggest engines, and certainly the U.S. has been one of the big beneficiaries. The consumer has been for our trade policy historically, not just over the last 8 years, but certainly over the last 30 or 40 years. We've been a big beneficiary of trade policy. And a stronger dollar certainly helped. The stronger dollar has made those international goods, those foreign goods, much cheaper for U.S. consumers. So that's been a big benefit for the U.S.
You talk about the dollar, the strong dollar, that could encourage companies to go to other countries and do business, just what Mr. Trump wants to avoid.
No, that's true. But when you look at, again, when we parse the markets, the smaller stocks, the smaller U.S. companies are beneficiaries because, again, a lot of their input goods for their final products come from international. They can buy a little bit cheaper. They're not exporting as much as the S&P 500 is, for example. So part of the reason why small caps have done so well since the election is they've been kind of insulated from and benefit a little bit from a stronger dollar.
Paul put together some notes, some numbers on past transitions of power. And I have to tell you, Paul, I was surprised to look back at where the Dow and the S&P were back, you know, when Clinton took over and where Obama was at. From a historic standpoint, give us a notion of this. What should we see today if the Dow falls, if the S&P drops? I mean, what might we expect?
Well, if you go back, and again, it's one day, or the numbers that I have are the day before, the day of, and the day following. So it's just a couple days in a very long history. But what's interesting is when you take a look at new presidents that are coming in, so not a second-term president, but new presidents that are coming in, the markets tend to be down on Inauguration Day. They tend to be down the day before. Yesterday was a down day. But then they rally subsequent to that. Actually, the worst Inauguration Day return was Obama's first term in 2009. Mm-hmm. Big surprise, we were still in the throes of the financial crisis. So does that portend bad things? In certainly Obama's case, not so much. Again, as with everything else, we're just taking a look at a very small sliver of the much larger picture.
You had where the S&P yesterday closed 2265. What was it on Clinton's first day? Was it 800?
When we go back to Clinton's, it was 776.7 in 1997. He was a 286. I go back to 1989. It was a 286. So, yeah, we're almost eight to nine times higher than when he took office.
The long view is something that you always are telling us, right? That's as we think about our portfolios today and moving forward. Remember the long view.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we can get excited about this transition today, and we can wring our hands. Certainly a lot of people were wringing their hands 8 years ago at that transition and where we were in the economy. But again, taking a look at long-term trends, and we always talk about earnings of the S&P 500 and economic growth as being the big driver, the economy continues to do okay. Not fabulous, but okay. As long as that's the case, we can see the markets continue to kind of grind higher here. We're certainly concerned about the global economy, and the same is true there. What we're going to be concerned about is where we start to see those numbers roll over. We're not there yet. We're concerned that we probably can see something like that if some of Trump's policies are initiated. If we do wind up with a trade war, that will certainly impact our economic outlook. But for now, at least, the markets look okay.
Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Paul, it's always good having you here. Will you be watching the inauguration today?
We'll take a little time out and sit and watch, absolutely.
Probably a good thing for everybody to do. It's one of those days in America where everyone should be very proud and happy.
Absolutely.
All right, Paul, we'll see you again next week.
From ABC News, Tech Trends. It would be kind of like getting Amazon deliveries on the battlefield. The United States Army Research Laboratory has successfully flown the prototype for its new hover bike. This large quadricopter, officially known as JTARV, or Joint Tactical Aerial Resupply Vehicle, could someday be used to deliver supplies to soldiers on the battlefield within 30 minutes. Engineer Ernesto Garcia Lopez says it's a joint effort between the Army and Marine Corps.
The demo we saw was a unique opportunity for us to show a seamless transition between one Army organization and another Army organization and having the industry along the whole time.
The prototype is electric, but engineers are now working to extend the system's range to up to 125 miles using a hybrid propulsion system. And with a payload capacity of up to 300 pounds, Army researchers envision a future JTARV flying low to the ground at speeds of up to 60 miles per hour, carrying vital resupply to the battlefield. With Tech Trends, I'm Karen Chase, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It is 5:38 on this Friday edition of The Opening Bell. We may see higher airfare costs this year. That's according to one report that's out. And also, aviation security is in the news lately after the Orlando shooting. Another incident has happened in a baggage area. Let's bring in Rick Cassini, the founder and CEO of FareCompare.com. He's with us this morning from Dallas. Rick, after the Orlando incident, it's now, what, the second case of something happening in a luggage return area at an airport. The situation in Orlando, a little bit more serious. There apparently was a little bit of lax security there, not many officers on duty. Let's talk a little bit about that. Is this something that we're going to have to maybe re-examine, and that's the security in the baggage claim areas?
Yeah, I think the issue is how far does the security ring extend, right? If it starts extending into the public areas around the airport or even out into the parking garages that are close to the airport and it keeps pushing back and back, it's going to cause all sorts of delays and hassles. So I think as that security perimeter starts to increase and expand and you know, whether or not it's a true security perimeter where they're actually moving metal detectors back that far or, you know, cars have to go through something, it's going to cause all sorts of issues. And essentially, the airlines have to be worried about this because just people will stop flying and start driving in some cases, especially if the thing's under 4 hours or so.
Yeah, we saw at Fort Lauderdale that there were really no police officers around when the suspect there started shooting. Are there small things that they can do?
Absolutely. They can actually post arm people in those particular locations. It's never, I mean, I've been to Europe a lot. You see this at European airports, people with automatic weapons almost everywhere in the airports. It's not a fun thing to be walking around and feel like you're in potential danger. So I can see the reticence to do it to some degree, but essentially they're going to end up having to do some of this. What do you have smaller airports in Fort Lauderdale? Do you do that there as well? So essentially, this is going to have to change, and it's going to be a hassle for passengers, above and beyond the normal hassles of flying.
You know, last point on this Fort Lauderdale situation, it's sort of brought up, too, that you can actually check a gun with ammunition in it. And this guy seemed to have got it out pretty easily and loaded it in a bathroom. Is that something that we need to maybe re-examine as well?
I think you should re-examine everything. Every time something happens, there should be a thorough review and a decision. Does this make any sense to allow some of this stuff? I mean, clearly people do check weapons. I think checking weapons along with ammunition might be something they want to look at in the future. So certainly it needs to be looked at. And I doubt that it happens very often, but that, you know, all it takes is once.
So, Rick, this is a good time to sort of remind people what the laws are in terms of saying stuff or being out of control or having a temper at the airport. What are the laws that are in place?
Well, essentially, after 9/11, if you had any sort of an encounter, verbal or physical, with a quote-unquote TSA worker, security worker at the airport, you were subject to criminal charges almost immediately. That did not extend to airline employees and airport workers until a recent note that was sent by a few Congress people over to the Department of Justice saying, yes, those people are covered as well. This is something that those unions have been fighting for a decade and a half. So essentially, any encounter, whether verbal or physical, with anybody at the airport has potentially put you on the hook for criminal charges. And I think, again, there's some common sense that has to be involved, because they can have bad days as well, and they're the judge and jury decide whether or not you're verbally abusing them or not.
Yeah, and this really goes to, too, just you sort of have a powder keg in some situations, especially when you have a lot of delayed flights and maybe an airport is closed and there are a lot of frayed nerves. I mean, does this have the potential to be a bad thing or good?
Well, I think, again, it can be either one, and that's the problem, right? It depends on the person, because one person's, definition of what's a verbal assault is different than another, and the person that makes that decision is the person that's there. It's not like there's a third-party court that sits around to give you due process when these things happen immediately and you're going to miss your flight. So, essentially, it behooves passengers to be on their best behavior, even when they're having issues and somebody's giving them guff. It's not worth it. It's not worth missing your flight, waiting a week to take another flight, or being at the airport pokey. Just sort of, unfortunately, essentially, you just need to, hope that it doesn't happen. Now, these are very isolated instances. We're talking about 2 million people that fly each day. This doesn't even occur on a daily basis. So hopefully we won't see this become much of an issue.
I know in one of our last conversations, Rick, we were talking about airlines possibly adding phone calls again. JetBlue's been making a lot of waves this week, saying they're the first to have Wi-Fi on their aircraft. Is that real? I mean, other planes do have Wi-Fi, don't they?
They have Wi-Fi, but they're allowing voice calls over Wi-Fi. So usually that's been blocked. So people that use Skype or one of these other voice services like FaceTime, where you can do that, a lot of those services are blocked on Wi-Fi and while you're actually in flight. In this case, they're actually allowing that, given some new rulings from FAA and also with the FCC also allowing this to occur as well. There's some rulemaking. There's some stuff going on. You can actually put your two cents in on the particular subject. But essentially, they're leaving it up to the airlines to decide to do this. Now, historically, it's been very expensive to call on a plane. And unless the price is low enough, nobody does it. And I know the millennial generation, they don't call anyway. It's all about texting.
I don't want to catch you off guard here, but a listener wanted me to ask if you can recommend any good resources for parents traveling with children. If they're going to a place, are there any good sites or locations or things that can help them plan a trip that'll be child-friendly?
Yeah, in fact, well, we've written on this stuff extensively on our site at Fair Compare. You can check our blogs out. I think the best rule that there's a couple things that you should do. You should research the fact if it's your child's first flight. There's airlines and a couple of different agencies that will actually have a whole course around those. And even for white-knuckle flyers as well, the most important rule that you should remember at the airport is any child 12 and under can go with a parent through metal detectors, and you can skip sort of this quote-unquote scary body scanner. Now, for young people that like Star Wars and stuff, maybe the body scanner's not so scary, but essentially they do have resources for that. Check that out. We have an entire list on our kids section, and you can check that out at faircompare.com.
We've also seen recently a lot of people talking about the last flight of the 747. Are we seeing this actually come out of the skies now for good?
It's hard to say, because Boeing has actually been selling newer 747s. They actually have it in their lineup. So worldwide, clearly that's an airplane that's going to be around for a lot longer. But here in the U.S., it looks like that's one we won't see very often, only on maybe liveries of other international airlines.
Well, Valentine's Day is coming up, Rick, and people are starting to think about spring break. Any good deals? What should we be looking for?
Yeah, so I was looking around that time frame. If you're trying to get out of town, if you're going down to Florida, your best bet, Orlando is running about $150 cheaper than Miami right now for that time frame, which is President's Day weekend. L.A. is running about $150 cheaper than San Diego. San Francisco also the same price at L.A. at $230 round trip. If you're wanting to head back to the Northeast, Washington, D.C., New York, Boston, your best bet's D.C. at $150 round trip, New York at $180, and Boston's actually running $230 in that order.
I saw the, I think it was the head of Delta recently say, 2017 is going to be the year of rising airfares. Are you going to see that as well, do you think?
Yeah, we've seen it starting to happen a little bit as well. Not a lot of capacity being added back in the system. Demand is pretty good. You know, depending on what happens with the economy through the year, that demand could rise pretty dramatically. If that demand rises, we're going to see more expensive prices. I think the one exception I would note is to Europe. It's going to be a lot cheaper this year. So domestic, more expensive. Europe, a lot cheaper.
All right, Rick. Happy travels.
Hey, thanks, Steve.
Rick Cini is the CEO and founder of FairCompare.com. You can follow him at Rick Cini and FairCompare at FairCompare. By the way, we did some checking on the TSA website about guns on airplanes and at airports. This past year, the TSA recovered 3,391 guns at U.S. airport during all of 2016. During the last week alone, TSA discovered 71 firearms and carry-on bags around the nation. Of the 71 firearms discovered, 67 were loaded and 21 had a round in the chamber.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. Dow futures up 9 points. The S&P up 5. NASDAQ futures up about 13. Oil trading at $51.94 a barrel. Let's bring in Orion Samuelson, our Friday conversation, commodities, agriculture. Good morning, Orion.
Well, good morning to you, Steve. And finally, a day before the inauguration, we got a Secretary of Agriculture. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, yeah, it's Sonny Perdue, but I understand there's a little bit of last-minute maybe back and forth.
Well, yeah, there always will be, because traditionally, if Midwest farmers don't get a Secretary of Agriculture, they're not totally satisfied. It's sort of like the American Farm Bureau Federation, where Southern farmers generally dominate the officer lineup, and you generally get a Southern farmer as president of the American Farm Bureau. We had Bob Stallman of Texas. Now we've got Zippy Duval of Georgia, and now we have a Secretary of Agriculture from Georgia. And interestingly enough, they will be known as Sonny and Zippy. And but some reaction out of the Midwest from the senator from Iowa, Senator Chuck Grassley, who said, you know, are there going to be any ag ideas at seat at the table? And, of course, we do have a lot of issues for the new secretary. The new administration will be writing a new farm bill this year. And the concern over trade agreements and the rhetoric on trade agreements in the campaign certainly bothered a lot of farmers, because now we're looking at Georgia. The agricultural trade amounts from Georgia. Georgia accounted for just 2% of total U.S. agricultural exports in 2015. The state ranks 15th among all states in the value of its agricultural production, generated a little over $9 billion in commodity receipts, according to USDA data. And Iowa, which is the state where we find Senator Chuck Grassley, Iowa ranked much higher than that, with receipts totaling $27.6 billion in agriculture. And California, of course, and this still surprises a lot of people, California, far and away the number one agricultural state in the country, $47 billion of receipts from agriculture. So Senator Chuck Grassley, a Republican from Iowa, said, I'm interested in how Midwest agriculture will have a seat at the table.
Well, Orion, I'm interested because we've sort of been looking back over the Obama administration and what has happened to the economy during his time. I'm interested in your take on how Mr. Obama's administration has treated agriculture over the last 8 years.
Well, basically left agriculture alone, and for agriculture that was good news because trade continued. We have the NAFTA trade agreement that was signed into law back when Bill Clinton was president. It involves trade partnerships between Canada, Mexico, and the United States. And my personal opinion is, despite what labor unions are saying it cost us a lot of jobs, I'm not sure that it did, but it certainly increased the volume of agricultural trade between the three countries. And so that is the trade agreement that the president-elect has talked about redoing and taking apart. And, of course, the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement, which really during the Obama administration was hammered out among 13 countries surrounding the Pacific and accounting for 40% of the agricultural trade on the planet. That was looked at very favorably by agriculture, and that was pretty much put together by the Obama administration.
We are seeing Reuters is reporting this morning that one of the first executive orders that the new president will sign is the one to pull out of the TPP and also to renegotiate NAFTA right out of the gate.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how far that gets, and it'll be interesting, I think, to see how strong Sonny Perdue will be in convincing the president that trade is vital to American agriculture. I've said this so many times, 95% of the world's population lives outside the borders of the United States, and we are able with technology to produce so much more than we can consume that we have to trade. If we were to shut down trade in some of these trade agreements, I think that then we'd have to decide which half of the farms and ranches we shut down here in the United States. One other thing I want to mention with the inauguration, agriculture will be represented in the inaugural parade today, and our own Max Armstrong will be a part of that. They're calling it the Tractor Brigade that will be part of the parade. Max will be driving a tractor, and the president of the American Farm Bureau will be driving a tractor. And it's going to be an exciting time for Max. We're delighted that he's going to do it.
Do we know what color tractor he's going to be on, and is he going to be hot-dogging it down Pennsylvania Avenue?
I don't think he'll hot-dog it, but obviously we know what color it'll be. It'll be red.
Absolutely.
And so that's going to be a big time. It'll be interesting to see him, along with other leaders in agriculture, president of the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance and president of the National Pork Producers. And so a lot of people will be riding representing agriculture, and I'm glad to see that.
We'll certainly be watching just to see Max right there.
Right.
Thanks, Orion.
Okay.
Orion Samuelson with us on this Friday edition of the Opening Bell. Now the Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Friday. It's January 20th. Of course, it is Inauguration Day. Donald Trump will take the oath of office as the 45th president of the United States. That'll happen right around noon. We will also see the transfer of power and the old leader move out. And the moving crews have already been busy at the White House making the change. Mr. and Mrs. Obama will board a helicopter shortly after the swearing-in. They'll fly to Andrews Air Force Base. We understand the former president at that point will have remarks there, and then he will board what was Air Force One for him, just a regular call sign, and he will leave Washington for the last time as just the former president on his way to Palm Springs for a vacation. We'll remind you that we'll have live coverage of the inauguration right here on 720 WGN. Just a number of blue-chip companies reporting quarterly earnings today. General Electric and Procter & Gamble. The economic calendar otherwise empty on this Friday.